SMQB's episode 156, March Madness is here. It was a big weekend of lots of losses. And for me, gambling in particular, I think Milk didn't do so well. At least we did convert some of our fellow SMQBs into the dark side and have ruined their futures. But let's get into
it. Talking about.
Hey, Rooster, who are you bringing to the bar this week?
I'm going to bring both UConn head coaches, Danny Hurley and Gino Auriemma, and we're going to debate who's the better coach.
I like it. I like it. Good one. Hope, who are you bringing?
I'm bringing one Kevin Keats from North Carolina State, the current head coach who was, by all accounts, on his way out until they pulled off a 5-game winning streak at the ACC tournament, beat Virginia, Duke, and Carolina to make the tournament. And at that point, he had all kinds of things kick in, including a 2-year extension on his contract, hundreds of thousands of dollars in bonuses. And now that they have made the Sweet 16, he gets another extension on his contract to a 3-year extension. So
It's like a Monty Python skit. I'm not dead yet. I'm not dead. Just not a flesh wound. Yet.
Exactly. And you know, I think they're end their run on Friday night. But it's what a great run, and it'd be fun to talk to Keats about all the things that happened and how his mindset is going into next year. Now
it's going to be really awesome when he decides to leave and go take a bigger job somewhere else. Hey,
NC State's a big job.
Mel, who are you bringing to the bar?
In addition to the tournament, we've got opening day on Thursday, gentlemen. So I know we're all excited about that. I'm taking my Rays manager, Kevin Cash, to the bar to give me the rundown on the year and how the Rays are going to beat the living shit out of the Yankees this season. That's where I'm at.
I like it. All right. I am bringing Caitlin Clark's dad to have some drinks. I'm not sure if everybody saw this.
Yeah.
After her sixth turnover of the first half and a little too much complaining, you could see him on the sidelines yelling for her to just stop her complaining. And at one point he said, get her out of the game because she was playing so badly. So I want to bring Caitlin Clark dad, who is still being just the dad to the most.
Still being a helicopter dad.
Yeah. To the most. A well-known college basketball player in the country right now. And I'm definitely buying him a drink. That's for sure.
Jesus. Sounds like me at a Little League game. Love it.
All right. Let's get into it, guys. March Madness. By the way, before we do that, I do want to make one special announcement. There's going to be a special episode of the SMQBs before opening day where we're going to cover baseball. So short and sweet. We'll get to it. Later this week, be on the lookout for an extra bonus, some bonus coverage from the SMQBs later this week. All right, let's get into March Madness. Rooster, why don't you kick us off? We just want to talk about some storylines. What do you got for us?
Well, first off, I owe a huge apology to Purdue for my predictions regarding their success in this tournament. The theme of what I'm talking about is you can't really base your predictions on past year's performances and so often not on these analytics that you read about. Purdue had two excruciating failures in the past two brackets to reach the Sweet 16, but things have changed. Edie has been working his ass off, getting stronger. If you look at him now, he's ripped compared to last 2 years. He was just this gangly, skinny, weak, slow guy. He's strong as hell. He's gotten better. His post moves are better. And the team around him is much better. They've gotten athletes around him who can move without the ball and shoot. So old Purdue is not predictive of this year's Purdue, and I was dead wrong about that. I mean, they put up 106 points against Utah State. Also, with respect to these analytics, you know, like Joe Lunardi is pretty damn accurate, but nothing's 100%. These KenPom analytics, for example, since 2002, every national champ but one has been in the top 25 in both offensive and defensive efficiency. Well, that would have applied this year to UConn, Auburn, UNC, and Purdue and Houston. So that's pretty damn accurate. Houston, Purdue, UNC, UConn are still alive and looking great. But man, did Auburn shit the bed on that one. It just wasn't predictive of Auburn. Didn't get past Yale. Just amazing. So
Yale.
So it's almost impossible to fill out these brackets unless you studied the hell out of the teams, how they're playing currently. And that's hard to do. Who has that kind of time? But I was certainly way, way off the mark with Purdue. I expected Purdue to do a typical Purdue and lose in the first or second round. I was wrong.
Purdue looks angry and on a mission.
Yeah, they sure do.
They are all business, and that Edie guy is scary looking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's definitely all business. If you see his post-game interviews, he's like, look, I already talked about that. All I care about is winning.
Yeah, I know. He's like,
me any more questions.
He said, I feel like a broken clock. I think he meant record, but he said broken clock.
So. Yeah. Yeah.
They're going to have their hands full with Gonzaga, though.
Sure they are.
And Tennessee, I still think they beat Creighton. Looms. Tennessee hadn't played their best basketball yet. They're a scary team for Purdue as well. They're big, and they're athletic. Those are the teams that give Purdue problems.
I think, Rooster, to your point about, you know, past performance and analytics, too, I mean, look at Kentucky. For some reason, and, you know, I think a lot of us are guilty of it, people thought Kentucky and Calipari were going to, you know, make a good run in this tournament. Why do we keep giving Calipari credit for past performance that's really not even recent past performance, right?
Right.
Absolutely. I mean,
well, they were playing well enough, though, Pope, that you thought they were looking scary for the tournament.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah, they were. I mean, I'm not alone. I mean, the national commentators, they're like, Kentucky's ceiling is a national championship. They have that kind of talent. So how do you explain their continued inability to get out of the first weekend under Calipari? And, you know, he's getting these one-and-done guys, but he's had some veteran teams. Like 2 years ago, he had a veteran team, and they lost to St. Peter's. It's really a problem, and I would love to maybe sit down with a good buddy of mine who's huge UK fan and talk to him about what he thinks the potential solution is in Lexington, because I can't imagine this is going to be acceptable for any much longer.
But you know, you're right. You're right about that. But getting back to Purdue, if you remember the previous two seasons, it was like Edie standing like a tree amongst saplings, and the other team would like triple cover him because he didn't have players who scared them. I can't remember the name of the guy on Purdue this year, but he reminds me of Jordan Hawkins from last year's UConn's national championship team. The guy is a pure shooter and an athlete, and just is going to keep getting better.
Milt, get in here. You wanted to say something about Calipari, I think.
Well, I mean, I just, you know, some of this.
You look very stressed out over it, too. It's very concerning to you, I could tell.
I think it's the effects of the weekend.
This is our injury.
I'm just pissed. I had Kentucky in. I think I had them definitely in the Elite Eight, which pisses me off that they're gone. But like, so two things. One, Calipari's either stubbornness or I don't know what it was to to adjust in the second half of that Oakland game when they were destroying them from the outside perimeter was really frustrating to see. But also, like, how much of this is, I mean, that guy hit how many three-pointers in a row? Like 10? You know, some of this is like, I don't want to say luck, but holy shit. If that guy goes 60% from the field, they lose. So, you know, I don't know. I just.
Yeah, but Kentucky was bigger than them. So guard the perimeter and don't let him get his three-point shots.
I agree. I have no
That's
idea.
Not a hard coaching call.
Adjustment. I didn't know why I didn't make that.
And it's not like this is the first year that they underperform.
No.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I think one of the interesting things about the past performance, you know, issue two is, and we touched on this, I think, last pod, but, you know, we're at a really unique and different time in, you know, can these old school, older coaches get the most out of these teams now? Calipari really succeeded when he was getting the one and done superstars and everybody was trying to get those guys and couldn't compete without a couple one and doneers. That's not the situation now. In fact, it's related on all this name, image, and likeness stuff. But a little side note, did you see that the Oakland guy, they've been signing up, Buffalo Wild Wings does this promotion where if the game goes to overtime, they give 5 free wings to everyone. They've literally been signing up players in the tournament who have played overtime games and stuff and just like stars from the tournament. So like this Oakland kid who hit all the three pointers, he's now in a Buffalo Wild Wings commercial sitting there eating his 5 free wings and stuff. So I mean, it's kind of just a little bit of a separate point, but the bigger point being we're at kind of a transitional period. So it's going to be interesting to see how these old school successful coaches transition to the new playing field.
You know, to that point, Bison, if you're a parent and you see last night the way Chris Collins reacted to his players coming off the court when UConn had that game in hand, you want your kid to play for that guy. I mean, just a really impressive showing of empathy and compassion for his players. As opposed to these older guys who are like throwing these kids under the bus every time something goes wrong.
Yeah. You mean like Patino?
Yeah. Tino, you name it.
Yeah. All right, Milk, what do you got for us? You got something that you took away?
Yeah. I mean, I've got three overperforming teams and three underperforming teams that I identified. So let's start with the overperformers. My first on my list is Clemson. Clemson was kind of like the meh, vanilla, who cares, know nothing really about them. They kind of probably sucked at the end of the year. I don't think anyone had them, of you guys had them in the Sweet 16, right? Like,
correct.
I had them losing to New Mexico in the first round. They were 1-3.
Yeah, me too.
In the four games before the tournament started, and they have just gone lit a fire underneath them. They're almost 50% from the 3-point line, or were on Sunday against a very.
I had them in the quarters in Sweet 16.
Okay, well, you're biased. You're ACC,
so of course I am. Here. Yeah.
You know, PJ Hall is playing unbelievable NBA prospect. They've been unbelievable on defense. They held New Mexico to 29.7% shooting, and then Baylor, who is in my underperforming teams, to 38.9% shooting. So Clemson's just come out of nowhere. You know, again, they have to play Arizona next round, but totally overperforming in my mind in that first weekend of play. The next team I've got is NC State. Of course, you know, I previewed the South last week. I had them losing in the first round. I thought they, you know, were completely exhausted after winning the ACC tournament. They had lost 7-9 in the regular season. They've now won 7 games in 12 days. Just an unbelievable turnaround. You know, in a small period, and they've done it. They haven't turned the ball over. DJ Burns is, you know, I started watching him in the ACC championship game. Pope, you may not know more about him.
Oh yeah.
Kind of, you know, he's played unbelievable.
He gets in foul trouble a lot, at least through the regular season. So he didn't see a lot of playing time in the big games.
Yeah. Well, he's turned it up.
He's just turned it up.
Yeah. And to your point, Keats, I mean, the coach, he's about to get fired potentially.
Yep.
And, you know, and now this complete turnaround. So, you know, totally overperforming NC State.
They have a kid on their team who has not eaten or had a drink of water since, well, probably he's probably had to have some water, but since Ramadan started.
Oh, wow. Jeez. I hope he's had water.
He's a starter. They're not supposed to drink, but I think he probably has to for health reasons. But hasn't had an ounce of food since Ramadan.
Holy shit.
Meanwhile, we have to stuff our faces just to watch the damn game.
Maybe that's good karma. It's good karma then that he's not eating. Who knows?
Right. And then my final one, honestly, is Gonzaga.
Like, what? Overperforming?
Where's Oakland and Yale on your list?
Oh.
They're out.
They're gone. They're out.
They're home.
They're 13 and 14. Buffalo Wild Wings NIL commercials.
I'm not putting one game wonders in my overperformance.
Okay.
Great job, Oakland. You got beat in the second round.
Good. Gonzaga. Good job, Milk.
Seriously, Gonzaga was literally a bubble team a month ago. 6 weeks ago, we were talking about them not making this tournament. Gonzaga, who we're all like, and when we were watching them on Saturday, like, this team could win the national championship.
Yeah.
Lost to St. Mary's. They didn't even win their conference. They lost to St. Mary's. They are averaging 87.5 points in this tournament. They're like 45% from 3-point. Dominated Arizona in the second half on Saturday. Big matchup against obviously Purdue after what we saw yesterday coming. But honestly, I didn't have Gonzaga. I had them certainly.
Dominated Kansas.
Kansas, excuse me. Yeah, not Arizona. But I didn't have them this far. I think they're totally overperforming. But you know, great coaching, guys. We talked about this last Sunday. Fuse, an unbelievable coach. He's got that team ready to go. So let's get to the underperformers. I'm not going to talk.
Yeah,
about
this is
Kentucky.
More fun. Let's tee it up.
We already talked about Kentucky. Honestly, my first one is Kansas. I they barely beat Samford. One of the worst second halves. It's just an uncharacteristic. I think when we're talking about underperform, we're talking about just uncharacteristic of a Bill Self coached team. They scored 24 points against Gonzaga in the second half. 24 points. That was ridiculous. They couldn't rebound. I mean, just everything was not going their way. It was really uncharacteristic. And if you're a Kansas fan, you got to be really frustrated with this tournament. So I don't know.
Has anybody's stock fallen further than, was it Dickerson? Isn't that their their lauded center who just laid a brick?
Oh,
well, he was hurt though.
Yeah,
he was hurt, but he said he was fine, and he played like shit.
Yeah,
they played terrible. We were all watching that together. I mean, literally.
By the way, another old school coach.
Yeah,
really, Bill Self.
Sure. I mean, Bill Self is certainly. I think he's in the Calipari, you know, generation of coaches.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, he is.
But
don't let the hair fool you.
Yeah, but look, he won the national championship 2 years ago. It's kind of hard to say he's got the same issues as the other.
And he's got four of his starters returning next year.
Right.
Yeah.
They'll be good next year.
Like I said, transition period, but, you know.
I think they were winning that game at halftime. Or down by one of the two.
It was close at half. I don't remember.
It was very close at half. I don't know. Just complete collapse in the second half. Very.
I know I shouldn't have taken them. Let's just put it.
Who's your third, Milk?
Who's your third, Milk?
My second is Baylor. I've got one more. I didn't include Kentucky. That was obvious. Baylor. I had Baylor going really far. 3 seed. They collapse at the foul line. 2 bad misses on Sunday. If you watch the game by Jacoby Walker, two bad free throw misses.
82% shooters.
Couldn't make a 82%. He missed two. Couldn't make a 3-point shot to save their lives. They were 25% from 3-point land against Clemson. Baylor was a really good team this year. A lot of people had him going. I had some people in the Final Four, so I did.
Pretty
disappointing performance from Baylor. And then the last one, Tennessee. Tennessee, I have in a couple of my brackets, I've got them winning the national championship. They have played like absolute ass on their last game against Texas. They were 3 of 25 from 3-point land, 12%. Atrocious. Connect, the SEC player of the year, has played awful.
Yeah.
He played terrible against Texas. Really underperforming right now. If they want to win the national championship, they've got to turn it around completely. So they're my last one on underperforming.
That's a good segue.
Weakness?
No, but that's a good segue.
Oh boy.
I wanna jump into mine.
Okay.
Now, I might have gone on a little rant last week.
You?
About the conferences that actually know how to play basketball and the poser conferences. And I think I commented that basketball really is about the Big East and then the ACC, like their little cousin. And
oh, please.
And I did specifically comment on how sick I was of hearing about the Big 12 and the SEC and the Big 10 in basketball. And then you got this jerk off chair of the committee who commented that some of the smaller conferences, we should probably stop giving bids to the mid majors because it makes it too hard to get some of these teams in here. Well, let's go through the records of some of these conferences here. ACC, 8-1. That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Outside
not
the
as,
first
not
four,
as good as
they're
the Big
undefeated.
East, though.
Atlantic 10, 2-2. The American, 0-2. The Big 12, 7-6. The Big East, 6-0. Big 10, 6-4. The Pac 12, 6-3. Oh, the SEC, 5-6. So the conferences, these are the fraud. The Big 12 has already lost Baylor, Texas Tech, BYU, and Kansas. The SEC lost Auburn, Kentucky, Florida, Texas A&M. And the Big 10 has lost Nebraska, Northwestern, Wisconsin, and Michigan State. I think I got all those right. But who else did they lose to? Well, Baylor lost to Clemson, ACC, right? I think I got that right.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Texas Tech went down to NC State, and then Oakland. Well, NC State beat Oakland. Okay. We saw that coming. Who else on here lost? Illinois? No, they're still alive. They're one of the ones that's still alive.
Yeah.
Iowa State still alive. Arizona still alive. Texas A&M went down to Houston. Okay, well, that's Houston's
almost beat them.
Good. Yeah.
Amazing game.
Florida lost to Colorado. Utah State lost to Purdue. Kansas lost to Gonzaga. I mean, some of those are okay losses, but still, what are these teams doing in the tournament? When conferences like the Big East get three teams in, I mean, it's, you know, these conferences, I think the SEC and the Big 12 in particular play a style of basketball that is fun to watch and they beat each other up during the regular season, but it does not make for good NCAA tournament teams.
I mean,
when
they
just
eight bit.
Run up and down. Yeah. And when you just run up and down the court and dunk, and just play fast and don't really play any defense, that is not a recipe for being a national championship team. So my storyline is that you know, the selection committee really shit the bed with their conference distribution. And it really, you know, it bore out. And my point that I made last week, I've been vindicated that the SEC, the Big 12, and the Big 10 stuck at basketball. And I, you know what? Next year, I might just watch the Big East tournament and call it the end of the season. That's it. It doesn't get any better than that. That's it.
But aren't you going to be eating your words if a Big Ten team, i.e. maybe Purdue or a Tennessee, wins a national championship?
Then no. No. Yeah. Because one team can come out. For sure. No, because one team can come out.
He's talking about the number of bids given.
Yeah. I mean, look at the number of bids.
To make this tournament better, you need to have a better regular season. Who are you advocating for? Okay, Seton Hall or like Villanova? They sucked. Like, well, they didn't deserve to make the team, the regular season.
But why did BYU, Kansas, Florida, A&M, Wisconsin, Michigan State, why did these schools deserve?
Florida was like 25-8 or something.
But but most of their wins come against SEC schools.
This kind of goes against your argument. This kind of goes against your argument, but really the team that should not have made it is Virginia.
Correct.
Yeah, well, that's true too. But my point is, if you're your conference, if you're beating up on bad teams in your conference and getting wins, you can't tell me that one of the reasons those conferences get eight bids is because people think, oh, those are the best conferences. That's the toughest competition. And what we're seeing is it's not. It's just not the toughest competition.
Milk, who would you take head up? Villanova or James Madison?
Well, did they win their tournament? Their conference tournament?
Who? Villanova? James Madison. No. Madison, maybe they did, but...
Yeah, they get an automatic bid.
I get that, but they're not as good as Providence.
I'm not saying that, but I bet... What conference is JMU in?
A-10. Yeah.
How many teams from the A-10 made it? Anyone else?
Yeah, because they're 2-2.
Okay, so JMU had one of those wins. So yeah, someone else. Yeah, but I mean, I don't know, guys. Are you going to penalize teams for going 35-3? I mean, are you going to say, oh, I mean, then you're going to get into like, we're only going to take teams because of the conference they're in. I don't know if we want to.
No, but you know, here's what I would say.
Well, no, I don't think
a conference.
The Big 12 got teams in because they were in that conference. Absolutely. And the ACC and Big East did not because their conferences were ranked lower for whatever reason.
Yeah. And I guess that's maybe my biggest point is eight bids is too many. None of these conferences are that deep that they should have that many teams in. And the top five in other conferences are going to be just as competitive as some of these other ones that come in. I mean, that's kind of my point is I just don't think that the quality of basketball between the Big Ten, the SEC, the Big 12, the Big East, and the ACC is so different that some of these teams should have had, you know, eight bids and the Big East gets three. I mean, that's silly. And it bore out. It bore out that way because they didn't do well. So,
I mean, right. You know, Mississippi State, South Carolina, I mean, you could argue that they shouldn't have got bids.
Yeah.
And, you know, look, Pitt from the ACC was a bubble, one of the last ones out. Pitt had just as good a record as Clemson and had just as many quality wins. Wake Forest, they were one of the last ones out. They beat Duke. They had, you know, a good conference record. Are you telling me that those schools, you know, heads up work, Mississippi State, South Carolina versus Pitt and Syracuse? I mean, I don't know. I just think that the results bear out and they have historically borne out. The ACC and Big East are two of the power conferences. They should get more bids than 3 and 5 respectively, period. End of story.
Yeah.
National champions. They breed national champions.
All right. Anything else?
I can't wait to advocate for the SEC in football next year because it's the SEC in a more dominant conference.
Well,
I'll be with you, Milk.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we will have changed our tune by then, Milk.
It's just a better football conference.
It is a better football conference, but that's hey, that's a very different conversation. All right, well,
That would be like the ACC getting more bids than the SEC in the football, and we'd be like, what?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I don't look. There were a couple of those SEC teams I didn't think needed to be in there.
Let's move on.
All right. Anything else on March Madness at this point? We've got our Sweet 16 set. What else? Anything else on the tournament? Didn't disappoint. Had some great games.
Always does.
Sweet 16 is going to be awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm looking definitely.
Cream,
definitely
the cream has
great,
risen to the
games.
Top.
Or one of my favorite words, chalk.
Chalk. All right. We'll be back next week with more on the tournament, of course. Just a quick MLB update. Like I said, we're gonna come back Wednesday, do a little bit of a preview of the season. At least that's the plan. And in the meantime, though, we got to talk about the Shohei Ohtani gambling thing just briefly. I mean, first of all, apparently Ohtani's going to address the media in
10 minutes.
10 minutes.
Oh,
so unfortunately, we're not going to have that breaking news probably for you here on the pod tonight, but this is just a wild story. I'm sure most people are familiar with it now, but more basically what happened is the Dodgers were in Seoul, Korea, playing the first two games of the season against the Padres last week when, like, right after the game ended, we find out that Ohtani's translator, Ippei Mitsuhara, had been removed from the team, fired, and was under investigation for allegedly stealing $4.5 million from Ohtani to pay gambling debts. Well, Ohtani's people made Mitsuhara available for an interview in which he said, "Hey, Ohtani was being a good guy. He helped me out. I didn't know what I was doing was illegal. I got in trouble and he helped pay off my debts." Well, shortly after that, Ohtani's people come out and basically say, no, that's not what happened. That's not what happened. We had no idea about that. There's a lot of theories about what's going on and all this. And one of the thoughts is that Ohtani, they didn't realize that that would be illegal also. And there may be some problems there for Ohtani if he did do the guy a solid and pay his debts. Of course, the more obvious one is that these were Ohtani's debts in the first place. We don't know that. And this was the result of an FBI investigation. And it doesn't appear, at least initially, Ohtani wasn't part of the investigation. So there's a lot of information out there that we don't have at this point. What we do know is the most popular, perhaps the greatest player in the game ever, he's making a case for himself, is now in the midst of a $4.5 million betting scandal. And MLB has opened an investigation into it. They have not put him on administrative leave. You know, there were some great memes out there about like, who MLB was putting in charge of this, like, you know, like Ray Charles is the guy investigating Ohtani because baseball doesn't want anything to touch this guy. So,
the $4.5 million debt was paid to the bookie by funds wired from Ohtani's account. So right. you tell me how an interpreter gets access to wiring funds from Ohtani's account.
And the other part of this that's, you know,
because Ohtani's saying it was a theft. His story now is that it was a theft.
Right. Now, they are turning up a lot of fraud in this guy, Matsuhara's background. Like he had said that he had been an interpreter for the Red Sox for several years. And the Red Sox are like, we don't know who this guy is. And he said he had like, he graduated from University of California in 2007 at Riverside campus, and that turns out to not be true. So this guy has a history before knowing Ohtani of some shady background. One of the things that's really interesting, though, is unlike a lot of the Spanish-speaking major league players, those guys usually just get assigned a random interpreter per game. But for the Japanese players, because there's so few of them, and maybe a little bit of a culture thing, they're much closer. Like Matsuhara was the guy who like helped Ohtani like find an apartment when he first came to the major leagues, like buy a car. You know, I mean, these guys are much more involved in their day-to-day lives than some of the other interpreters are. So certainly there was a very close bond. And who knows? I mean, I guess we'll find out soon what Ohtani's saying. It'll be really interesting to see if he ends up on administrative leave after what he said to the media.
There are three possibilities. Either Ohtani is lying, and he either was the guy placing the bets or wired the funds for his interpreter, or the interpreter is a genius fraud, got a hold of one of Ohtani's checks and got the routing number and the account number, and then impersonated him to the bank. Or the bank could be on the hook for this because the bank just took a call from the interpreter who said, oh, Shohei wants you to wire $4.5 million, and didn't confirm it with the account holder.
Yeah.
Somebody's in deep trouble here, and it could be the bank.
It could be the bank. I don't know. Fascinating story. It's going to get more fascinating. This is not what Major League Baseball had in mind when their biggest star signed in one of the biggest markets for the season. So,
right. That's what he gets from not signing with the Yankees.
Yeah, right.
same with his buddy who's already tanking as a pitcher.
Yeah. All right, so we'll have more on that later as the story develops. As we hear often from one of our fearless leaders, watch this space.
They're going to have to kick into baseball.
Movie bracket. It's time. It's time for the final four. We got to break down the final four going into opening day. All right, guys, the number one seed, Field of Dreams, versus the number 12, Bad News Bears.
Do you have what House's vote?
Oh, what an upstart.
I do.
Okay.
Good. I've got House's vote. Everybody has it. So I can't, despite my efforts, I can't manipulate this.
I'm going Bad News Bears.
Wow. Okay.
I think Field of Dreams is just too sickly sweet for me.
Oh, my God.
Milk, what do you got?
I mean, do I really have to answer this? You know what it is.
It's got to be Field of Dreams.
Put in Field of Dreams. Come on.
All right. Pope?
Field of Dreams.
Yeah. All right. Well, Rooster, it's disappointing that the one team couldn't go through unanimously, but that's okay. Field of Dreams advances to the final. I think the next one might be a little closer. I'm a little nervous. The natural, the three seed, the natural versus the two seed, Bull Durham. Milk, what do you got?
That is a hard one.
It's not even, it's no hesitation. It's so obviously Bull Durham.
Like, yes, it is.
I want the Costner finale.
Yes, I like that.
Hope, you got Bull Durham?
It's by far the most quotable baseball movie for me. Yeah. And I love it. Fucking love it.
Is it the best baseball movie, though?
We'll find out next week, won't
That's
we?
That's a factor.
Yeah. Naturals, the best number. It's the number one seed. House and I agree. It's the natural.
What are we at?
Two to two?
I'll place
a tie-breaking vote for not just the greatest baseball movie of all time, but the greatest movie of all time, Bull Durham.
Yeah.
What?
Yes.
Oh.
Vice
might go.
Just because the guy's a catcher.
Go with the natural.
So for
just because the guy's a catcher.
God. For all the bitching about the seeding, we've come down to the one seed versus the two seed.
Which kind of reinforces your seeding.
I think the natural should have been a higher seed than Field of Dreams, and it should be Field of Dreams versus Bull Durham.
Well, it is Field of Dreams versus Bull Durham.
Bull Durham.
Oh, you're saying it should have been in the semis?
In the final.
It is.
I mean, I'm sorry. It should be the Natural versus Bull Durham and not Field of Dreams.
Well that's why they play the game.
They lost.
That's why they play the game. Yeah.
You sound like a Kentucky fan right now. It's over, right?
Milk, share with us a good bourbon from the weekend. Lord knows we drank some.
We did. Our listeners must know the SMQBs got together over the weekend at Rooster's Place in Virginia Beach. And I don't know who bought it. Was it you, Nace?
Yeah, I picked it up.
Yeah, so I had never had it before, but he picked up a nice bottle of Rabbit Hole bourbon. They do have a rye, but this is the bourbon that we had. My first taste of it is we did a group shot. Before we went to dinner, I found it very tasty. A nice hint of fruit, I might add. It was smooth.
And just for the record, this was the Derringer Sherry Cask Bourbon that we had of Rabbit Hole.
Yes. Retails at about $60 a bottle, I believe.
$80.
Okay. All right. The price, maybe
most of our listeners, you know. Yeah.
Okay.
It was a special weekend.
Yeah,
it not a bad aftertaste. It was one of those burns your throat or anything. It went very well in a Manhattan. I think Pope can attest to that. He had about 18 of them.
Did Pope have any Manhattans?
We did go to the Manhattans Saturday. We did go with the Rabbit Hole.
Milk makes a hell of a Manhattan.
He does.
Thank you.
Making me a Manhattan anytime, buddy.
Thanks, buddy. So I don't know. What'd you guys think? I thought it was pretty good, maybe a little overpriced, but you know, I'd recommend it. You know, it's definitely one, I'd go back to.
I thought it was a good sipping bourbon. Other than it being in a Manhattan later.
We compared it to, we had some of the, $300 to $350, Elmer T. Lee, and it held up against Elmer T. Lee a little bit.
Okay. It's a good, like, you got to walk into someone's house, bring a gift. It's a nice, you know, nice bottle to carry in. It's a little different. By the way, absolutely stunning distillery in Louisville. If you get a chance to go there, I mean, the architecture in this building was just gorgeous. So, highly recommend visiting there.
Are you talking about Rabbit Hole, where Elmer T. Lee can be found? By the way, Rooster, where can Elmer T. Lee be found?
Well, as we said last week, Buffalo Trace.
There you go.
So, all right.
Where can you find Rabbit Hole? At any of your local liquor stores?
You will start to see it on the shelves a little bit more now.
Sounds like you have insider knowledge.
No, I think it's owned by Diageo now. I think they sold to Diageo like a year or two ago. So they have all those distribution networks and everything.
Definitely at ABC Liquor. So
yeah, it is in Virginia, right?
In Virginia, go out and buy it.
All right, let's get to a punch. Rooster, you got one. Don't call it a
comeback. I do have one. Punching Spanish soccer fans, Real Madrid and La Liga for the continued racism that gets just showered upon black players playing in Spain. About a year ago, the 23-year-old Real Madrid player Vinicius Jr., who's from Brazil, was subjected to such disgusting racial attacks and insults that Spain set up this friendly, quote, one skin game, Spain versus Brazil. Well, a few days before the game was to start, out come the racial slurs and insults against Real Madrid player Vinicius Jr. again, to the point where today he does a press conference in tears, saying that he's losing his desire to play. He's complained many, many times to the league and to the team, and not a damn thing's being done about it. And it's just disgusting. When Spain's going to really ruin its international standing in the soccer community if it keeps this up. So I'm punching the league, the fans, and the team for their shitty treatment of black players in Spain.
All right.
Unbelievable. I mean, these stories just never end in soccer. It's really, it's just bananas. It's outrageous. Any other punches? Who's got a lasso?
Barbecue sauce.
I got one. So, Yale, as Kenny Smith said, with the huge upset over Auburn. And if you didn't watch some of the TNT guys, Kenny and Chuck, go at it after that game. I mean, it's Yale sent Kenny a bunch of swag, and he was wearing that along with a little Yale basketball. I mean, he's just having a good time busting Chuck. But the Yale pep band was not able to make the trip across the country. And when the Idaho Vandals marching band found out about it, they decided that they would learn the Yale fight song and go to the game dressed in Yale band outfit colors. And they would be the Yale pep band for, you know, as long as Yale would last. So, of course, Yale lasted two games. They beat Auburn. They had some issues last night, obviously, but what a great story that these guys found out that the Yale basketball team wouldn't have their pep band. So they stepped up. Of course, they got an opportunity to go see a game, which they wouldn't have otherwise because Idaho wasn't in the tournament, but still that's fun. And it kind of, it's what collegiate sports is all about. I really thought that was a cool story.
I love that
why,
story.
Why was the Yale pep band unable to attend? I thought I heard it was they couldn't afford to send them, which blows my mind. Is Yale? That true? Yeah. Yale has probably one of the biggest endowments in the country.
The reason they have a big endowment is they know how to invest their money, and they didn't think that Yale had any chance of winning a game. So they said, we're not going to invest in this.
I mean, maybe the athletic department deserves a milk slap for not sending their pep band, right? But these guys, the Yale basketball players and the families and everybody who traveled, they deserved a pep band, and by God, they got one. Thank you, Idaho.
So this isn't a lasso, but it's about the great idea, the great part of the sports and everything. You guys heard that Oakland, which is based in Michigan,
Auburn Hills, Michigan.
They sold $8,000 worth of merchandise to the zip code of where Louisville. So the expectation is that the Louisville guys would next year will be wearing Oakland stuff in the stands when they play their rival or their in-state rival, Kentucky. I think that's just hilarious.
That is some good trolling.
Yeah, it's some really good trolling.
I love it.
Yeah. So, all right. Who's got a buzzer beater? I got one. We had some excitement in Formula One over the weekend.
Oh, yeah. We
did.
Just
only 23 bets.
That's right. Just when you thought that everything was preordained and Max Verstappen was going to just saunter through the season and win his fourth consecutive world championship, which is probably still going to happen. We actually had Max go out, I think on lap two, when a brake wouldn't release and caught fire and they had to retire the car early. It made for some great racing. It was exciting. It was a lot of strategy on when guys pitted. And then you had at the very end of it, you had George Russell crashing and almost flipping the car over. It was actually a very entertaining race. It's fun to see what happens when Max isn't out there. And Carlos Sainz, the guy who doesn't have a seat for next year right now, is the one who ends up winning the race. So very fun F1 story for the weekend. And, maybe that car is not perfect.
And to Sainz's credit, he had already passed Matt on lap one before Max started to have the brake trouble. Although I think Max tried to make some underhanded remark that he noticed problems with the brakes, like from the start, which is
bullshit. Yeah. Yeah, right.
I mean, but if you listen to Checo, he said regardless of Max, the Ferrari had a faster car at this race.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. it would have been interesting to see if Max could have pulled his magic disappearing act in the front, or if the Ferraris could have chased him down.
Like I said, Ferrari was in first place after the lap one. Sainz passed him.
Yeah. So well, a little, Max, you know, Max cracking the
trying
armor
to catch him.
Theory, Max would have got him on DRS next lap, but it'll be fun. See what happens in Japan. There's a little bit more intrigue.
All right. So here we go. Just real quickly here. Otani, very sad and shocked that someone he trusted did this to him. The first time he knew about Ippei's gambling was after the first game in Korea when they had a team meeting in the clubhouse. He didn't know this was happening. He didn't know that his Matsuura had been stealing from him. It's been a tough week. He's very saddened and shocked by this. That's the latest. This press conference is going on right now, but that's what we got for you. Anybody else with anything? We will be back here with Baseball Palooza. Rooster, go ahead. What do you got?
Yeah, I have a buzzer. Trevor Bauer hit 3 scoreless innings yesterday against the Yankees, although the Yankees didn't have many of their starters in the lineup. He's been signed for 5 games to pitch for Diablo Rojas of Mexico City, and looked good, looked strong. I think he was basically trying out for the Yankees with that performance, and we'll see what happens. Interestingly, longtime Yankee, who's now 41 years old, Robinson Cano, also played for Diablo Rojas and went 3-for-4 with a home run. So it'll be interesting. I mean, Trevor Bauer, you know, was kind of vindicated, and so he deserves a shot, I guess, if he didn't do what they said he did.
Very interesting story. There's going to be a lot of blowback if somebody signs him. There's apparently a number of other women out there who have, you know, talked to reporters but not gone on the record at this point. Boy, I'll be really curious to see if he's back in the majors. I don't know.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, there's a lot of smoke that's coming up. And listen, we don't know anything about any of that. Just what you're seeing in the Twitterverse. It's going to be really interesting to see if he gets back. I mean, you're right. By this investigation, he was somewhat vindicated, I guess. But that's a hot button issue in Major League Baseball with Otani. They may not want anything to do with Trevor Bauer coming back to the majors. Yep. So let's see what happens.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. All right, guys. We'll be back here to preview baseball.
Hey, and a shout out to House in the Dominican Republic. I understand, Milk, he's doing an undercover investigation into what's going on with Wander Franco.
Right, we'll get a full report next week. Looking forward to it.
That's right.
And we'll look forward to the photos. And thank you, House, for our brand spanking new SMQB's hats, which I'm sporting right here. Rooster, what do you think about them?
I think they're awesome. I think the pink logo is a good look.
It is.
The SMQBs are Brian Bandwagon Pope, who hails from Dallas, Texas, and has never met a first-place team that he didn't have a personal connection to. Michael Rooster Phelan, hailing from Richmond, and who roots for teams from New York, or is it Boston? I can't remember which it was. One or the other. Also, Patrick Milk Michler from Tampa Bay, and he is still massively in love with Tom Brady and will never get over his man crush on the GOAT. Toby House Milrod, a long-suffering sports fan hailing from Philadelphia, whose Eagles team, they're still looking for another quarterback. And I am Chris Bison Nace, hailing from Washington, District of Champions. Thanks for listening.